Right, well, it's 5 minutes in, so maybe I should make a few introductory remarks for tonight's FAQ, which is The Joy of Sects. The original plan for the comedy column was going to be Sects in the City, but I think Joy of Sects is pretty good as well. And I kind of put this up as an FAQ, just because we don't really talk about the left wing, you know, the rest of the left, the Trotsky's left and these people. We don't really talk about them very much, except for the odd bit of stray gossip. I originally conceived of this as a bit of a joke item, but then I actually thought about it and thought, well, it's not really a joke, is it? Talk was originally scheduled for July, and I had a load of notes on it, which, like an idiot, I've lost. So I've had to rapidly scramble to find something to put something together on this. Now, I don't know, probably everybody here has read the original terrific critique of the left, or description of the left, by John Sullivan from the 1980s, the first of his was called the Go Forth and Multiply, Forth as in Forth International. And then a much, much expanded version of that was... He published later on as soon as this pub closes. What I'll do is, if anybody hasn't read that, I really recommend that. I mean, they are really good fun. It's a really good fun thing to read.
Never heard of it, Paddy, actually.
Okay.
Certainly not the second one, anyway.
Well, I'm going to put the link in the useful links. It's on Marxist.org, and they've got a collection of three of his articles. So I'll just briefly describe what those are. They were a set of articles that he wrote under a pseudonym, because he was an activist himself, in the 1980s, early 1980s, basically giving a rundown of the state of the left wing at the time, mostly concentrating on the trot groups, because they were the big ones at the time. And surprisingly, even though he's talking, you know, the title was the first article was, as I say, it was Go Forth and Multiply. Ho, ho, see what he did there. But despite that, despite talking about mostly the Fourth International derivatives, the SPGB gets a mention. And in fact, we come out of his sketches surprisingly well, considering the withering scorn that he heaps on the other trot groups. It's really quite surprising if you read those things. They are entertaining. He calls our hostility clause a stroke of genius, although he's definitely got his tongue in his firmly in his cheek. He describes the SPGB as one of the most stable elements in the entire left ecosystem, for the reason that we've been around so long that it's not just sons and daughters of members now in the party, it's grandsons and granddaughters. And he seems to be under the impression that we sort of breed our membership, which is very far from being the case, of course. So I do recommend those. I put that link in the, useful links channel. All three articles together are about 30,000 words, so it's not massive. And the third of the articles is how to set up your own political party and gain recruits. And again, it's a complete piss take. And he says, don't use any of the famous theorists. Go and find some really obscure Marxist theorists from Japan that nobody's ever heard of, and then you can set the terms of the interpretation of that theorist, and so everybody has to sort of follow what you say because they've got no idea. It's really good stuff, actually. So I do recommend that. But I was trying to find for this discussion something a bit more up to date, because of course that was the 1980s. And I did come across a LibCom article from about 2010 that did a similar thing and mentioned John Sullivan, but did a similar thing for 2010, updating it all. And it was a really funny article. But unfortunately, I can't find it. I've been trying to find it today and I just can't locate it. Now, one of the things I remember it said was that nearly all trot groups are separated by millimetre-wide theoretical differences, but they're all united by one common working-class principle, which is that they all hate the SWP. It also said that weekly worker is more famous for its left-wing gossip page than it is for its Marxian analysis. So I thought that was quite funny, because we're aware that Weekly Worker does tend to comment quite often on the activities of other groups. Interestingly, though, we don't seem to have that culture. SPGB members in general, I would say, know very little about the political world of the left outside the SPGB. You know, if you ask the average member, have they heard of Pablo or Ernest Mandel or even Jerry Healy, you know, chances are you'll get a blank look. And we're not deliberately a sectarian group. I think we're very an open-minded group, but it does sort of reinforce the sense that we are quite isolated, or a favourite word of mine, solipsistic, the idea that the universe revolves round us alone. This impression that you're the lone voice of sanity in a kind of left-wing asylum can very quickly encourage a kind of hardline dogmatism that you see sometimes. And I can't help thinking of the sort of knee-jerk panic that got raised a year or so back when we mentioned that dread phrase, fellow traveller. But in fact, in the reality is that there are groups out there that overlap with us in terms of ideas, and we should be aware of that. In fact, we're part of a sort of dynamic and shifting ecosystem. Now, of course, there's nothing to stop any party member learning about this ecosystem, this ecology of the left, if you like. But we do nothing as an organisation to encourage that knowledge. And in fact, if you talk to individual members, they tend to regard that sort of thing as train spotting. You know, it's boring, it's nerdy, it's irrelevant. Well, I don't know if it's just me, but I don't think it is boring. Perhaps it is a bit nerdy, but I don't think it's boring, and I don't think it's irrelevant, because it's where we live. And shouldn't we know about where we live, about the political milieu that we inhabit? Surely it shouldn't be left up to individual party members to find this sort of thing out for themselves. We can't judge our own ideas in a vacuum. You know, we need social context. If we recognised and talked about that context instead of ignoring it and kind of pretending it doesn't exist, I think members would not only be much better informed and forearmed when it comes to debates with other groups, but they would also be able to see why we hold the views we do and why we don't hold the sundry other views that exist out there. So how about it? This is the discussion as well. I'll leave it tonight. How about it? Should we put more attention into this as a party, as part of members' education, to show that we understand the world we inhabit, and to show that we're not like monks living in some isolated little monastery? So what do you think? Over to you.
Paddy, I've been listening to you, but I've also been reading John Sullivan's piece on the party that you put on in on the chat page or whatever it's called, and it's very good actually. It's quite amusing, and it's pretty sympathetic on the whole. And he seems to have written it, well, as far as I can make out, he died sadly in 2003. But he seemed to have written it just about then, just before the party was to celebrate its 100th anniversary. And, you know, if you read the last paragraph of that piece, it's, you know, you could almost think that he was, you know, he was very much with us. So that's interesting, Paddy. Thanks very much for that.
Yeah.
And I'd be listening to read the other stuff as well.
Well, there's actually two entries, because there's a shorter entry in his first article, Go Forth and Multiply. That's where I first saw it, and I thought, oh, that's quite surprising, because, you know, surely this is about the Fourth International. But no, he had an entry about us in there, and then a much more expanded version, which I think is the one you've just seen, in the subsequent article, as soon as his pub closes. But both of them are really, you know, really quite, you know, he doesn't really have a bad word to say about us.
I do think we should know about these left-wing parties, because if we ever get in discussion with them, etc., I mean, we need to be able to understand what they're talking about to sort of when we put our argument across. I mean, yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong in not knowing about them. I mean, it's yeah, it's not something to be frightened of.
Let's face it, we've got a lot more in common with them than with most people who live in capitalism. I mean, a lot of their analysis of capitalism and the way it works and the effect on people is pretty close to ours. I mean, okay, they fall away when it comes to seeking any kind of meaningful resolution to the problems they describe, but at least, you know, they're not completely taken in by the any kind of benign, more or less benign facade of capitalism, and they're, you know, ready to to give an analysis which, you know, in some ways you could read in the Standard. Okay, you know, once they start saying about what's going to replace capitalism, they're all over the place. We know, but you know, there is common ground there. There's no doubt about it. There's a fair amount of common ground.
I tend to disagree. I can't find any common ground between us and the left. None whatsoever. They're into hierarchies. They're into a class system. They're into money. They're into state. You know, they're into everything that we are opposed to.
But Brian, but that's all to do with their supposed solution to the problems of capitalism. But when you look at their criticism of how the system works and the effects on people, I mean, there's a lot that we can agree with. There's no doubt about it. I mean, let's face it, we can agree with them a lot more than we can agree, for example, with these anarcho-capitalists we've been debating with, or with your average, Labour or Conservative Party member. I mean, no, they're not socialists in our terms. But nevertheless, you know, there is a certain amount in common there.
I'd like to know where.
Well, okay. I mean, pick up a copy of, for example, The Socialist Worker. I often do when people are selling them. I usually buy one. They're still only a quid. And, all right. You know, the whole thing gives you the impression that the country's in ferment, that, you know, everybody's just ready to sort of tip over into revolution, etc. I mean, it's a completely false impression it gives. But nevertheless, you know, you read quite a few of the articles and, you can only nod your head in agreement to what they're saying about, you know, certain of the effects of capitalism on people, you know, the poverty, the unemployment, the inevitable sort of, you know, differences in wealth possession and so on and so forth. Now, you know, you don't find this in your average sort of daily newspaper or anything like that. Very, very rarely anyway.
One of the things that Sullivan says, actually, about us is that we're very unusual on the left in that we never get involved in discussions about strategy and tactics, which is basically what theory on the left consists of. It's all about how to get to the destination, but none of it is on the destination itself. And what he says about us is that you go to an SPGB meeting and pretty quickly it turns into a discussion about what socialist society is like. Well, that's not actually my experience of most party meetings, but that certainly does happen in the party, and certainly not, it's not a bad thing either. And he says that's really interesting. That's something that really separates us from the left. My feeling about a lot of these individuals, anyway, in a lot of these groups, is that they probably wouldn't disagree if you laid out what socialist society was like. A lot of them wouldn't even disagree with that. But they're so focused on strategy and tactics now, they've almost forgotten what the destination. They've almost forgotten to discuss that. It's like they're so caught up with the process of travel, they don't know where they're going. But I don't think it's true to say that they've got nothing in common with us. Their strategy and tactics are all about now, and they're completely different from ours. You know, we don't have anything in common with them on that thing. And when Brian, when you say they're into money and the state, they're into these things as part of the strategy of getting to the ultimate society. Now, I'm not defending that. I'm just saying they're not into money in the state per se. It's part of their, it's part of their process as they see it. And, you know, I don't think we should ignore, I don't think we should rule out the fact that these, that different groups may have a sort of, you know, a longer term idea, but they just don't talk about it, and they don't, articulate it in the same way that we do.
I've got to disagree with you. You know, from my perspective, the left are not into strategy, they're only into tactics. And also from my perspective, the strategy for the Socialist Party of Great Britain was laid down at its very foundation. That's why we don't talk about it. And the strategy is self-emancipation of the working class by the working class, through class struggle. And to achieve that, what we suggest is a non-violent revolution. So there's the strategy there and then. We don't involve ourselves in tactics because that's a pointless game. And that's all it is. It's just a bloody game.
But could we not agree, Brian, that however great the differences are between us and the left wing, that doesn't mean that we should ignore the left wing and we shouldn't talk about them and we shouldn't be aware of who they are and what's going on? I think that was the main point I was making, is that party members don't really know about this, in this left wing media at all, because we don't talk about it in the party. We kind of act as if it doesn't exist. That was my main point.
Yeah, we can't ignore the left wing. They are part and parcel of the class struggle, but they're on the side of the capitalist class, although, you know, the greater majority of them don't realise that. But don't look on them as, you know, or don't even give them any comments of sectarianism and all the rest of it, you know, when they have their infighting and so forth. Don't get involved in that. You know, steer well clear of that. If you don't want to know, let them get on with it.
Surely the sort of the culture in these groups is sort of quite different to what we're used to. I think the part of the point is that they're focused on sort of strategy and activism in the short term, which gives them a certain sort of, you know, enthusiasm and much more sort of zest, if you like, than we've got, because obviously our aims are much more long term. And I think that sort of creates a different mood. You know, they're focused very much on, you know, we can stir up, you know, sort of activism now. You know, that's their sort of immediate goal, and that's what they focus on. And so that's sort of reflected in their energy.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'll give you a couple of really short quotes from Sullivan, actually. He just talks about Trotsky as indulging in capitulation to whatever happens to be in fashion. He talks about Tony Cliff from the SWP. Cliff merely looks at the market and provides what the punters are demanding. And about the IMG, he said, the IMG respond to the spirit of the day. If bestiality became popular, they would take that up too. So just to reinforce the point, I'm not suggesting here that we're all chummy friends with all of the left. That isn't the point of this at all. The point is to I'm asking, do party members know enough about the left, or are we just right to ignore them?
Oh, right, yeah, if I could...
We don't ignore them, Paddy. We don't ignore the left. When they have something to say, you know, we put in our analysis. Don't ignore them.
As we've been talking, I've been looking at the latest issue of Socialist Worker online, and as I say, it's mainly sort of a call to arms from British workers to get stuck into the Tories, etc., etc. It is, but and it's, you know, calling for reforms and so on and so forth. But it's not all that by any means. So, for example, there is an article on Russia, which says workers in Russia riot and strike over unpaid wages. And it says a wave of workers' protests and riots over unpaid wages and working conditions has swept Russia during the during the virus pandemic. And it talks about how it says the struggles of Russian workers show how, in times of crisis and slump, the capitalists try to protect their profits at workers' expense. They do. But they also show that workers are ready to fight for their rights by any means available. Well, they're not usually, but nevertheless, you know, this isn't the kind of thing that we could say, no, it's completely wrong. You know, we couldn't agree with this at all. It says economic demands give rise to political demands, ones that will unite workers in all industries and regions of Russia and the world. And it ends by saying, all right, you know, a bit triumphantly, I know, someday the target will no longer be a specific employer, but the political elite, the state, and the world economic order. By acting together and showing solidarity, we can change not only our own situation, but the world's. Now, I know they don't mean the kind of thing we mean by that. I know that. But nevertheless, you know, it's something for us to sort of hang on to and talk about them too. We also want to change not only our own situation, but the world's, don't we? And we don't want to go in the same direction as them because, you know, we're dubious whether they really sort of mean that. But it can't be right to say we've absolutely nothing in common with them.
Alan, did you want to say something then?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Mike.
All right. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you could hear me earlier. I suppose as to the sort of differences between us and the left groups, you know, it's a lot of it's around sort of definitions. You know, we use the word socialism with our meaning and they use it with their own meaning. So there's a risk that any sort of dialogue with those groups, you know, would have to start off with lengthy, you know, clarifying definitions. I certainly think we should mingle more with groups on the left, and you know, because yeah, I think people are sort of like-minded to the extent they've got an emotional sort of dislike or hatred of capitalism, and you know, that's the starting point, really, isn't it? You know, that they probably sort of feel something similar emotionally to us, you know, looking at how the world is run. And, you know, obviously the differences start from, you know, the interpretation, the solutions. But yeah, I think at the basics, that's where our sort of similarity is. It's that sort of feeling about the world. But yeah, the problem then lies of, you know, us and them having a different interpretation, which is, you know, say partly shaped by our different uses of terms like, you know, socialism, capitalism, state capitalism, class. You know, obviously they would go with a middle class, whereas we wouldn't, you know, other differences like that. So yeah, but there's the risk of arguing too much over concepts.
I'd agree with you in one respect, Paddy, that we need to know as a party what the theoretical basis of the arguments of the left are, which, as we know, is Leninism, is the democratic centralism, so-called, is the imperialism, the highest stage of capitalism. The working class have been bought off in this country, according to them, by the super profits from the third world. Hence, all of my political life, I've seen people say, support the Palestinians, support the Vietnamese, blah blah blah, all this. By the way, about 3 years ago, I couldn't believe it. I saw the fucking troops out movement in Manchester, two of them, and they're still peddling this idea that by supporting Irish nationalism, you can weaken British capitalism. So I agree, we need to know about that. But all these little fucking splinters of I think you'd end up like the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, sitting on the steps discussing that sort of level of so-called ideology. But what I do agree with is that we need to know what the basis of their arguments are. They don't know it all in a lot of cases. Yeah? They do not know the theory. But what I'd also say, supporting you slightly, but also I think you're talking about minor groups. What about somebody like the Green Party? That these are people who share an emotional disgust with the way that they don't realise, they might not call it capitalism, but these people as well are dissatisfied. So I don't think you should limit it to the left. I think you should limit it. I think that the Greens is also a useful area for study, particularly since they're coming up with so-called economic solutions. They're coming up with this backward-looking local production for local people, local economies, keeping money circulating within the local area. Absolute load of bollocks. And a lot of people have thought, well, I mean, quite a few people falling for it. In fact, they got an MP, fuck's sake. That should tell us that where maybe our focus ought to lie.
They're minor groups, some of these left groups, it's true. But some of them are nothing like as minor as we are. I mean, we've got to look reality in the face. I mean, they have a way of attracting, I know how they do it, but they have a way of attracting members that we don't. And, some of them have got considerably more resources and more members than us. And, quite a few people in the party at one point were on the left, on the political left, either belonged to or sympathised with these left-wing groups. So, we shouldn't just simply reject them out of hand and say, what they're saying is absolutely, nothing to do with what we're saying, because it's simply not true.
What does anybody think about the idea of having a regular column in the Standard about the left? Do people think that's a bad idea?
How would it be pitched, do you think? What sort of tone would it have?
Well, I imagine that. I suppose that would depend on the writer. I mean, the reason why we haven't done it in the past is we couldn't get someone who was willing to do it, who knew enough about the subject. So, in a way, it's a bit of an academic question. But, if somebody was willing to do it, then I would think a fair and even-handed tone would be the right approach. Not a sort of, a piss take or a stitch up or something like that. But because that's not who we are. But just a sort of fair and even-handed, a bit like Howard's being, saying, where they've got things to say that we think are sensible, we say so, and where they've gone off the rails, we'll say that too. I mean, a lot of the left, incidentally, they spend a lot of time criticising each other for the sometimes really wacky positions they take. I mean, Steve mentioned earlier about supporting the North Vietnamese. I mean, that was one group. I forget which it was. I can't remember if it was Militant or the IMG. But the other groups just took the piss out of them for that. And then another group supported the Gaddafi and the Libyans. But again, that wasn't all of the left. That was one group. So they don't all take one position. That's the source of a lot of their fighting between themselves, And I think we could learn from that. It would be interesting for our members to know about that stuff, without us taking any sides or anything, just saying, It's a mixed bag, Some things that they say are sensible, other things are just downright silly. Like that talk we had recently on Posadas that Bill gave, that was really interesting. His South American Trotskyists were among the wackiest and most bloodthirsty set of people out there. But even on the British left, the British section of the Fourth International, there are some really far out ideas knocking around, or there certainly were. Good material, I think, for us.
I'm all in favour of having a column on in regards to the left wing, as long as it opposed them and exposed them for what they really are.
Yeah, well, I think that goes without saying, Brian, doesn't it? I mean, we'd hardly publish saint-like panegyrics of them all.
That's not what you suggested, Paddy. You suggested not taking sides. I'm suggesting that we do take sides in regards to the class struggle and expose the left wing for what they are. They support capitalism. They are the left of capitalism.
No, I think you're misreading what I'm saying there, Brian. I meant not taking sides with one group against another group, but looking at their views impartially. Of course,
we've got... I apologise. Well, I'm sorry, I was mistaken.
Well, I perhaps didn't explain. Of course, we're always going to put our own view, aren't we? Obviously, that goes without saying. But, just to take a kind of impartial view of the different groups and, recognise where they've got something good to say and, and criticise them where they haven't.
I still like to know where they got something good to say.
Well, as Howard said, pointed out, they've often got quite good things to say about capitalism and what's wrong with it.
Easy enough to complain about capitalism. The point is to challenge it.
Well, I mean, maybe you... If you cast your mind back to, say, the SWP in the days when it was the IS, Tony Clift was a bit of a... he was quite ahead of the rest of the Trotskyist left in his sort of view of Russia being state capitalist. I know we were there first by decades, but, that would have been something where we could have said, well, Tony Clift's right.
I remember, I think it was one of the first things I read when I joined the party. It was a pamphlet, Adam might have written it, called something like What's Wrong with the SWP or something like that, which I'm guessing was maybe published early 90s. But I haven't seen anything more recent than that about us and our attitude to other groups. But yeah, I'd welcome a column about it. I think that'd be interesting. I'd look forward to reading it.
I definitely don't think we should focus on these left-wing groups. I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm surprised to hear the party actually had a pamphlet devoted to the SWP. I mean, it's sort of giving them oxygen, really, isn't it? And suggesting that, what we're focusing on is these sort of, small left-wing sort of grouperscules. No, we shouldn't be doing that. But there's no reason why we shouldn't... write about them in the same way as we write about other aspects of the capitalist scene. There's no reason at all why, if they say things that we would agree with, we shouldn't say so. Nothing, there'd be absolutely nothing wrong with having a regular but not too long column in the Socialist Standard about these sort of various small groups that call themselves socialists. The title of it could be, is this group socialist? That would be a sort of hook on which to hang it. And there could be a bit of an analysis and, that would give us a chance to state what we understood by socialism. I'm not going to do it, but an idea for somebody else to.
The party has never published a pamphlet on the left wing, especially not on the SWP. I think it's taken on that.
I seem to remember. I think Mike's right. I think I remember a pamphlet on the SWP. I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? The SWP is the biggest group on the left now. I think it probably was in the 90s as well, and It would make sense for us to have something to give to SWP members saying, look, you shouldn't be in this organisation, you should be in our organisation. Here's a pamphlet to show you why. Clearly, it wouldn't make any sense to do a pamphlet for each of the groups, but I would quite like to see a sort of general sort of map of the left, of the groups with a little bit of an entry for each. I think that would be really useful and informative for our members, and it's just a shame we don't have anything like that.
Hello again. I've found the thing. I've just posted a link to it on the Useful Links page. Yeah, it's from the mid-90s. And it was a education document, but yeah, it was a printed copy I read, obviously, at the time. I don't know how widely it was distributed, but yeah, I've put the link up anyway.
Thanks, Mike.
Hi. One thing I noticed about when people of the SP are talking about these left-wing groups and things like that, how democratic are they? Is there any sort of way we can work out? Because people talk about arguing about the what they stand for and that. What they do in practice, how democratic are these organizations? One of the reasons I'm in the Socialist Party is it's democratic.
Well, the answer, Mike, is not very. this is where I think we would agree with Brian here. You know, they're really not democratic. They all subscribe to this democratic centralism idea, where it's a sort of top down structure.
Well, I'd like to see if you're going to do a map of them or a flowchart or whatever. Work out on how democratic they are. What are the democratic ones like? I think one of our comrades now in the Anarchist Federation or the Anarchist Communist Federation, I'm not sure what the title is at the moment, but they appear to be quite democratic. What he's told me about them, joined them. I think that's a real difference between us and most other political parties. We are democratic.
And the lack of democracy extends to if there's any discussion taking place, for example, refuses a reply to the SWP, for example. One of the members would be allowed to reply to us unless it was authorised by the Central Committee.
You just had a look at the document, Mike, that you put on. It's a substantial piece of work, isn't it? It really is. It's a detailed analysis. Okay, it's a bit out of date now, 1995, but and it was an education document rather than a pamphlet. But it just shows that at the time we had people in the party who were very well versed in this kind of thing, which we probably haven't got now.
I feel kind of obliged to point out that there's a difference between being old and being out of date. That pamphlet probably is old, but whether it's out of date is debatable. After all, you know, we don't think Marx is out of date.
Yes. What I mean by that is that it's obviously not going to take into account things that have happened both in capitalism and in these sort of left-wing groups since 1995?
Well, I read the Sullivan entry on the SWP. It's quite a big entry. And, you know, apart from the fact that they've had a few more front organisations since 1995, you know, he describes them really well. You know, he says that's what they do. They create these sort of, they have these campaigns. You know, they, at the time he was writing, they had the Anti-Nazi League and the somewhat unsuccessful Right to Work campaign, and that's how they proceed. And, you know, they're still doing the same thing today. They hitched their wagon to the anti-globalisation thing. Now they've hitched it to the Extinction Rebellion thing. So that's what they do. They poach off whatever's popular at the time. And, you know, so, you know, what he said and what we said back in the 90s probably still applies.
Yeah, it's interesting that on the front pages of the newspapers today, there are students sort of demonstrating about the mess the Tories have made of GCSE and A-level results. And the placards they're holding are actually SWP placards.
Yeah, I think they say justice for students, don't they, or something like that. That's their latest.
Something like that, yeah.
That's their latest thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I was reading just a bit about the Fourth International in the 1950s. I don't know too much about this, but I was sort of skipping through it and reading that when Ernest Mandel took over from Pablo, who was the guy that was convener of the Fourth International, his kind of, in quotes, theoretical contribution was to focus on students rather than the traditional industrial working class. And an awful lot of Trotskyists followed, whether they were followers of Mandel or not, they went down this road, including the SWP, of targeting students over and above, you know, traditional working class. And you sort of still see that, you know, the ghost of Mandel still hangs over a lot of the left. It's quite fascinating, the sort of, yeah, the culture of the left. I mean, I think this is fascinating stuff, really. We never really look at it.
Well, in the 70s, the SWP, or IS as they were called, I forgot when they changed the bloody name, they couldn't understand the fact that they got all these students and we got all these industrial workers in our branch. You know, we're talking a fairly big branch in Bolton at the time with industrial workers, and they fucking never had any. They just had these studs. It's a good way to take the piss out of them, by the way. That's about all.
I remember hearing Tony Cliff, and he said the reason they didn't get many workers is because they were all working too hard, really, you know, and students had free time, and, you know, they had more time to. So look at politics, and that's what he said was the reason why they were all students, really. Yeah.
I think a lot of it was 1968, and the fact that the Trots at that point kind of realised that the revolution wasn't actually around the corner, and, well, this is how Sullivan pitches it anyway, that what they did was they started to recognise that prior to that, they'd been very anti-lifestyleism. They'd been, you know, very anti these kind of middle-class fads as they saw them, like, you know, vegetarianism and things like that, and they insisted this is nothing to do with the working-class struggle. And then after 1968, when they realised that they weren't going to get this kind of proletarian revolution, they kind of changed their attitude and said, oh, well, you know, if that's what they're into, that's what we'll be into. So, again, another sort of cultural shift.
So, in actual fact, they're not really serious about the class struggle.
Well, you can say that, Brian, but I mean, I think that's, you know, they're serious about what they think the class struggle is. You know, they're serious about what they do in their way, but, you know, we just see it a different way. You know, we're just as serious as they are, but we see it differently.
Does anyone know how they're funded? They seem to have very significant resources indeed. Nobody does then.
Well, some of their funding comes from the membership. They get the 10% of the wages on the window. And over the SWP, each member is expected to sell so many copies of the journal, the weekly journal. And if they don't, even if they don't sell them, they've got to pass on the cost of them journals back to head office.
No, but that doesn't work. I mean, you know, there's enormous turnover of membership. People come and go. I'm certain a lot of them sort of don't pay their dues, as it were. There must be another more solid source of funding for them to be able to produce the website they've got, the monthly journal, the weekly newspaper, all the you know, the posters and the banners and so on and so forth. They've got to have a more solid source of funding to be able to do that.
They seem to have a printing press. That's where they get the placards. Yeah, yesterday's big idea. They'll have placards today. But they seem to have a printing press, and I suspect that's part of the funding. I would imagine it's commercial. Just as a thing, I've noticed nobody's mentioned one of the, I'm not sure if they're a sect or a party, but the CPGB seems to be about five times bigger than we are. Nobody's actually, has there any been study of, education study of that since the 30s or 40s?
Are you talking about CPGBML?
The Communist Party of Great Britain.
Marxist-Leninist.
No, the one that published the big one. That published the Morning Star.
There's about five different Communist parties. The CPGB produce, aren't they the ones that produce Weekly Worker?
Yeah. Morning Star, people who produce the Morning Star every day.
Well, I think that's a separate organisation.
Well, they call themselves Communist Party and they have lots of Communist Party branches and things. I'm just wondering, because they're the ones that seem to stand in the general elections. I'm not talking about the little splinter groups or anything that's splintered off, the Marxist-Leninists, the Maoist type things, but the mainstream Communist Party.
No, the mainstream Communist Party sort of collapsed as the Soviet Union collapsed and splintered into various groups, one of which retained the name and produces, as Paddy said, the Weekly Worker. The Weekly Worker is written, although different names are given to the authors of the various different articles, apparently it's all written by two or three people. And their membership is very small indeed. I mean, it might even be smaller than ours. I know one member in the area I live in the South Wales area, and as far as I can see, he's the only one. There may be one or two others, I don't know, but I'd be surprised if they were larger than we are, actually.
Well, I get the Morning Star to keep have an eye on what's happening throughout some of the other places outside England. And I've noticed on the Saturdays they have a list of where their members are, their branches are, and they appear to be quite active. I'm just wondering, I don't suppose any Socialist Party members have bothered to investigate them recently.
I mean, you said, have they got a branch in Bolton? Because I'll go and check them out.
Well, can I finish?
Well, go on.
Okay. They seem to be quite active in certain ways. And I'm just wondering, because producing the Morning Star does cost a lot of money. They seem to have a lot of contacts. But I don't suppose any of the... I'm surprised you don't know how many people are calling themselves Communist Party, because there's been no demos for years. I know there used to be about five or six different ones. But this one seems to be quite large and active, compared to, say, the SWP, the WRP, and the various other Ps that are around.
It's clear that the party needs a left-wing train spotter.
Well, I think we do have one or two left-wing train spotters, but when I approached them about doing a column in the Standard, they weren't keen. I mean, I'd like to know how the Morning Star manages to get distribution in Sainsbury's, because I know I've seen it in there.
It's a newspaper. They have, they probably have a contact with whoever distributes the newspapers.
Presumably they've got rich donors, haven't they, these groups? I mean,
I don't know. That's why I was wondering if we have anybody who keeps an eye on them or anything. See, I've seen them. When I look at the general election results, and I tend to look at them and go through them and work out all the little parties, I've noticed these people get about 1,000 at a time, sometimes 2,000, under the name initials CPGB. And the WRP, there's a few of them do stand. There's a few other groups, minor groups, there's Workers' Liberty to stand. But these seem to be the biggest one on the left.
Yeah, I think you're asking some interesting questions there, Mike, and the fact that we don't really know the answers to these questions kind of bears out my original point, in a way, that, perhaps we ought to know more about what's going on around us.
I think I have a slight advantage over some. I actually go out and get three newspapers a day, and I read them. I don't have TV or anything like that. I prefer to read things rather than sound bites or little bits on the screen. And one of them is the Morning Star, and there's quite a lot of news overseas about the struggle against this class overseas. And it's, you know, you don't get that in The Guardian or in The I News. I'm surprised that nobody else, I know Rob Fox gets it as well, but I'm surprised nobody in the SP that are on this site at the moment know too much about them, because they are large.
Right, sorry, can I just come in, Howard? Mike, you reckon they've got a branch structure, do you? Because I've just been looking at the newspaper online and I can't see any. You've seen something about their branches, have you?
At the weekends. They have a sort of double issue with some weekends. I suspect there's union people subscribing to them, because they do have a lot of information about union struggles, you know, locally.
Right. I've just seen one of the things, which is called Campaign of the Week. Write to us if you've got some sort of campaign that you want to publicise. So yeah, that's a potential. But they're also appealing for money, that they're fighting fund, and they're short of money. So what do you think these are called the Communist Party of Great Britain, do you? I'm talking about the Morning Star that you mentioned.
Yes. They have that fighting fund for about a dozen years. It's been there forever. Fighting fund.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. So they're obviously getting donations from that. Yeah.
Yes.
But what I'm asking is, where have you seen this thing about the branches? Because
I'll have a look at one of the older ones, Saturday editions, because that seems to be where they are. There seems to be about 30 branches.
Okay. Well, if you could let us know, I'd be very interested to go down to one of the meetings. We've done it before. We've been down and we've exchanged views in Bolton with these people in the past. And I'd be quite happy to go and do it again when they hold meetings.
Maybe you can organise a debate with them. How about that, Steve?
Without law, they'd be frightened to death of us. They won't debate us. You've got to go and put the case for socialism in one of them, because otherwise it's all this fucking flannel for peace and socialism. What a load of bollocks! Oh, sorry, that wasn't particularly balanced judgment, was it, Paddy?
Well, I work with somebody in the CPGB, and I said, "Oh, how many people in your branch?" And he went, "Well, me and this other bloke." So I said, "So do you have meetings and, you know, talk about politics?" And he went, "No, I don't really know anything about politics."
Well, the SWP don't hold meetings. They don't hold public meetings.
Yeah, they do. I've
never seen an advert from SWP.
Yeah, the SWP hold regular weekly meetings, or before the lockdown they did, in the community centre around the corner from me, where I go to play short mat bowls on a Thursday.
and
they sometimes get a decent crowd, actually. Sometimes it's the, you know, same old sort of 9 or 10, which is more than we get. Sometimes when they've had sort of, you know, interesting topics, they've had 20 or 30 people there.
Yeah. Okay. I stand corrected.
I was going to say, Steve, but Paddy, in a sense, got in before me, that if you went to one of these CPGB meetings in Bolton, you'd probably find that there were about two of them there at the most. And Paddy sort of confirmed that.
Well, that's I'll leave it up to Mike to give us some info. Yeah.
Yeah, I normally read the paper for the news, not for the organisation. But I'll look at it over the next few weeks and see what I can find out. It's just that I have noticed when I look through the election results, because, you know, after every general election, some newspapers print about 8 pages of every result, full, and the votes and all that. And the CPGB seems to have a lot of candidates, about 50 to 60. And they seem to get roughly about between 500 and 1,000 votes each time. But I don't know if you would call them a sect or a party, because I'm not sure of the definition. I didn't catch everything that everybody said today because I was in the kitchen cooking for about 40 minutes when it started.
I wonder if, in some bizarre kind of way, the Morning Star is funded by the CIA. Not to be a conspiracy theorist, of course.
It's more likely to be the British SIS, isn't it? Not to be a conspiracy person either.
I think that's one of the favourite accusations that all the groups on the left like to level at each other, that they're all funded by the CIA.
There's quite a few funded by the SIS or the SD or whatever they call them over. The current one that's the designation of the English intelligence, secret police.
We're not, by the way, are we? Funded by the CIA.
I could mention about four names that whose activities over the years would seem to be part of that part of, coming from that side. People who disrupt the runnings of the party, the people who try to get as many people out as possible. The fundamentalist people like that. Because I tend to judge people's actions in the party by what the results are.
Oh, let's all join Mike Brown down a little rabbit hole now. We used to have a running joke in our branch years and years ago that if there was a mole in the party working for MI5, you'd expect them to be hardworking and efficient and blend in and do their job properly. And therefore, I'd probably identify a mole by anybody in the party who was hardworking and efficient, which would rule most of us out.
I think you've had it in that case, Paddy.
I'm not.
Have you found you out?
I'm not. Far from efficient, I can assure you.
I remember going to a meeting in Manchester and I turned up on the wrong night and they said it was a sub-aqua club and it was full of Stalinists, really. You know, so I thought that was quite funny. And then years ago, Huey went. We used to be in a pub in Manchester. And before us, there was the Budgie Society. And Huey thought it was a front. But one day we turned up and they came out with the budgies or whatever. So that was quite funny.
Yeah, somebody told me about another group. It was a Stalinist group that were masquerading as a scuba diving club. And back in the 30s, there was the Clarion Cycling Club, wasn't there? That was. That was also a kind of almost a front for various socialist leftist groups.
but cycling was one of the ways that people went out to do propaganda, in the late 19th century and early 20th century. They go out on that the Clarion Club. I mean, obviously the Clarion being the Trump. I thought that was a sort of labourite type of.
It was to do with the freedom of the byways after the laws got changed, after the Ramblers Association, which was quite militant for the time, demanded the right to use public footpaths, wasn't it? So that's right. So cycling and rambling were actually quite heavily politicised issues back in the day. So that kind of explains the link a little bit.
Yeah, but I think it was before that. I don't know why. I think that was the case.
Actually, the Clarion Cycling Club still exists. I looked on its website, and tragically, there is not a single mention of socialist politics anywhere. It's purely about cycling now.
Well, I won't be joining then.
Yeah, exactly. What a lot of boring bastards they must be.
Look, there was a... It suddenly come to mind that there was a review in the Standard recently, about a year or two ago, of a book written by somebody, an academic, a sort of left-wing academic, on the British left. I can't remember who reviewed it. And I sort of vaguely knew this chap because he was involved in the trade union that I'm a member of as well. And I wrote to him, drawing his attention to it, and he said, thanks very much, yeah, I already know about it. Paddy, did you remember at all a review of that description? Because whoever did the review is likely to sort of, be our left-wing train spotter. or anyone who wants to be our left-wing train spotter could read that book and maybe become one.
You know, unfortunately, I can't remember what I wrote last week, never mind what somebody else wrote two years ago.
Okay, all right. Yeah, maybe Adam would know. He's pretty good on these things.
Are there any sects that you haven't mentioned yet, Paddy? Whatever happened to the WRP? What are they called these days? I used to know a lot of these names when I was in London, but since moving to Lancaster, they're just meaningless. They don't exist.
Mike, I don't know if you were here when I think you weren't here when I introduced tonight's discussion. I mentioned some pamphlets written in the 1980s, which I've put a link to in the Useful Links channel. You might find you might have heard of them before. The famous one's called "As Soon as This Pub Closes," but there's actually three of them by this guy John Sullivan, and it's on Marxist.org. So I've put a link up there. They're really entertaining, really interesting, and it covers the WRP and a load of other organisations in there. So you can get up to speed on those, or at least up to the 1980s speed on those.
Oh, nothing in since this century started then.
Well, that was just.
I tend not to read anything like that. Reading something in a museum. I'm living in 2020, you know.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Mike. So, welcome to the new century, along with the rest of us. In fact, the point of these things is that they haven't. Nothing much has really changed on the left. You know, the groups that are. When Sullivan was writing, the Militant was the biggest group by far, and the SWP was a lot smaller. So that's changed. The SWP are now the big group, and Militant are a bit sad by comparison. But a lot of it's still relevant. A lot of what he said back then is still it's perfectly relevant now. So, you know, don't ignore it just because it's a bit old. Like I said before, just because something's old doesn't mean it's out of date.
We haven't really mentioned left communists tonight. I don't sort of group them along with, you know, sort of the rest of the left, because there is a bit more similarities between some of their views and others, although there are some big differences. But I've been to a couple of left communist meetings that were very weird and very awkward, but met other left communists in the West Midlands who've been very, sort of good to talk with, and you know, it's all been very very amiable, and one of them has cropped up on Discord a couple of times. So yeah, I think the left communists, yeah, there's a lot of weirdness there, but yeah, there's also room for discussion as well with them, I think.
Yeah, I've got a friend in. We've got a friend in Lancaster who's a Bordigist, and he's quite fast. He's a great train spotter. He would be able to write that column of ours like a shot. He's very entertaining. I'm still a bit baffled about what Bordigism is exactly, but he's quite interesting on left communists.
I've got the title of the book I suddenly remembered a couple of minutes ago, which was, if I remember rightly, reviewed in the Standard. It's called Contemporary Trotskyism, Parties, Sex and Social Movements in Britain. And it's written by John Kelly, 2018. I remember reading sections of it, which was available actually online on the Amazon website, and it looked sort of pretty even-handed. So if anyone, as I say, if anybody wants to become a train spotter, that's probably a good place to start. Contemporary Trotskyism, Parties, Sex and Social Movements in Britain by John Kelly. In fact, I think I'll read it myself.
On the CPGBML, they were quite active in the West Midlands, mostly by putting up posters of Lenin. And I've also been along to a couple of meetings with them, and they're a bit weird. And yeah, one May Day demonstration, yeah, they were carrying big banners of Stalin, so I think scratch the surface, and yeah, there's probably quite a sinister edge to the SPGBML. Again, they're okay to talk with, but yeah, I don't know, I was on edge a bit when I was meetings with them. But yeah, again, you know, they've got their own take on things, but yeah, they're not much common ground with us at all, I don't think.
Don't they also support the North Koreans? Don't they see North Korea as a society and China? Mike?
Wouldn't put it past them. I don't know their policies in detail, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think
the only times I've come across. Sorry, beg your pardon.
Yeah, I think that their banners also have Mao on as well, but I'm not sure about the other places, but yeah, I would have thought they'd look on them with envious eyes.
I've just put a link up on the useful links for that contemporary Trotskyism review that Howard was talking about. It's quite a long review by Dave Perrin, so it looks quite good.
Oh yeah, but we obviously needed Dave Perrin, didn't we?
Yeah, he'd be good. I think he's too busy speculating with our money on the futures market.
Well, if it's too much of an ask for one person to write a regular column, could the three or four left train spotters each be asked to put a piece forward on a different group and, you know, sort of publish them as a column? You know, I don't know if it might be worth asking around that way. Maybe published anonymously if they prefer.
Well, I could give it another go. I mean, I can think of one or two other people to ask. I just thought I'd ask here first and see if I could, try this as a litmus test, see what people thought. Whether it'd be a worthwhile thing to do in the Standard. I don't know. There seems to be some sort of qualified support for the idea.
Not from me, by the way.
So not from you because you think, it's not worth discussing them, we don't need to know about them.
Let's know about Leninist anti-democratic ideas. Let's know about Leninist anti-socialist ideas. Trotskyite socialist anti-socialist ideas. Fine. But this thing about, who are we going to do? The CWO, the ICC, are they still going, by the way? I don't know. SWP, I don't know. No, I think the underlying ideology, we ought to expose that for what it is, anti-democratic and anti-socialist.
Well, I mean, for one thing...
These people are anti-socialists. That's the issue. They're anti-socialists because they're seeking to bloody well... they're forever putting forward these silly ideas, provision, what the hell are they calling them? The immediate demands, absolute load of bollocks. And we know why they do that, because they want to attract workers. But without talking about socialism, let's be honest about what they do. They've got utter disdain for the working class.
Yeah, but Steve, you're a member of the Education Committee. Do you not think, actually, that our members ought to be educated about the left rather than just ignore them? Don't forget, new members who join the party won't necessarily know anything about this. Don't you think they ought to know? We should make it possible for them to know.
Well, in terms of anti-democratic centralism, in terms of the Leninist theory, yeah? Is that what you mean? Or are you talking about the communist, et cetera, et cetera, and then their disputes?
Well, for a start, I think that you're just lumping them all in together as if they're all one body, but they're not. You know, they have disagreements with each other, and I think we could probably learn something from those disagreements that they have with each other. I mean, for one thing, they don't all agree about this idea that the ICC put forward, the idea that, you know, the sort of decadence of capitalism, that the capitalism's going to collapse. They trace that the beginning of that decadence from 1914, you know, so as far as they're concerned, capitalism has been collapsing since 1914. But other groups sort of, criticise that. Another argument is imperialism, you know, the Leninist idea about imperialism. But there are people, you know, a friend we've got in Lancaster's one, who criticises them, the ICC and the CWO and all these people, all these groups, you know, for their their argument about imperialism. You know, there are sort of live debates going on amongst all these groups, and you know, we just sort of turn the other cheek or turn a blind eye to it and pretend it's not going on. I think it's a shame. I think we're missing out on what's going on, what's being discussed, and I think our members would be interested to know this stuff, to know what these arguments are.
Well, you'll need to find the volunteer. I mean, to talk about the ICC or the CWO, I think they've got about 6 members on them. I mean, fuck's sake, they're a really tiny organisation. And they won't tell you that, by the way. They won't tell you how many members you've got because they're frightened to death of being found out for what they are.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I mean, you know, we get dismissed by the left because we haven't got many members. You know, they'll dismiss us because of our membership figures. Well, are we going to play the same game?
No, I think the game we ought to play is putting forward socialist ideas to the workers and exposing these people for what they're anti-socialist.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. This is one of the reasons why I asked them about what parties we know of, or what groups or sects, are democratic and which aren't. I mean, Steve, you just seem to know more about the undemocratic ones. Well, that would be interesting for us to know about, rather than us trying to look on the web and find that stuff. That's one major thing that's different from us, from most of these other groups. They're not democratic, either in practice or in theory. We are. That's what I would like to know, which is which.
Well, are they going to tell you? Are the SWP going to tell you that they're not with or CWO? Actually, they might be, because there's only 7 of them, so they might have the chance to be democratic. I don't know. I honestly don't know, and I don't know how you'd find out.
Well, it's quite easy. You just ask them how they conduct their internal decision-making. You know, most of them will tell you if you ask them. You know, and you can then, I've done that with SWP members. I say, well, how does it work? How do you decide things? Oh, they'll say, well, you know, we have a conference once a year and it works like this. And pretty soon you get to the nub of the matter, which is that the agenda for that conference is set by the Central Committee. And you can say, well, do you mean to say that your branch can't put things on the agenda for discussion? And they'll say, oh, yeah, but we're allowed to vote on those agenda items, you know. So then you can sort of gently point out that wouldn't it be more democratic if you were actually allowed to put things on the agenda instead of simply voting on whatever it was that the Central Committee had decided that you should talk about. So, I mean, you can elicit this information fairly easily if you just ask.
Right.
I went along to an ICC meeting with Matt Vaughan Wilson a good few years ago, and just having a chat with him in the pub, and Matt asked, "Oh, how are you organised?" To them, and one of them snapped back, said, "Oh, we're not some dodgy cult, you know," and that was his answer. You know, I think he sort of preempted what we might be thinking, and then they said that they don't use their real names, and they just use a letter of the alphabet. So we only knew them as M and D, I think, the two that we spoke with. And Matt asked, because I think we'd had a few drinks at this point, Matt asked, oh, you know, if you each have a letter of the alphabet, what happens when you have more than 26 members? And
and then I think... We'll come to that when we get...
Yeah, I think not long after that, we made our excuses and left. Yeah.
It sounds as though they are some dodgy cult then.
Well, yeah, yeah.
That's very good for coming from someone called Howard.
Sorry, Steve, didn't catch that. Your connection's very spotty.
That's a nice comment from someone called Howard M.
Mike, I think they were taking the piss out of you. That sounds like something from a 19th century crime novel or something. I think they were probably taking the piss of you out of that, you know.
No, it really happened, and they really did, going by the tone of it. There had been a few drinks, but they did really refer to each other by initials. Not just when we were around as well. That's how they signed off articles and things.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting, amusing thing about a lot of left groups and also anarchists is that they've all got a rather inflated idea of their own significance in the scheme of things. So they like to operate as if they're secret societies. And actually, John Sullivan said this: they're an absolute gift to the Secret Service. You know, they give the secret services, you know, some way of justifying their income by infiltrating all these groups. So, you know, paranoia is a feature of the left and also anarchists.
It'd be quite flattering to have an infiltrator, I suppose, wouldn't it? You know, that we're important enough to attract one.
Well, Peter Lawrence told me a story once about when the our party was going to organise a demo. He said, I can't remember a time when we were in a position to be able to organise a demo, but apparently we were going to do it in the 1970s. And he got a knock on his front door from Special Branch, and they came round and told him that the SPGB's application to organise a demo had been approved by a Special Branch.
Well, we have had infiltrators. It's well established.
Have we?
Can't say much about it now, but we have had infiltrators, yeah.
It's not very hard to infiltrate us, though, is it? I mean,
No.
I think we would enjoy being infiltrated, I mean, because we've got nothing to hide.
It's a good point. It's a very good point.
Well, I'm just going to go and write a. I'm just going to go and write file my report now. So I bid you good night.